Welcome to Your Legislators. I'm Anthony Moreno. Our guest on the program is District 34 Republican State Senator Ron Griggs. Senator Griggs serves on the Senate Conservation and Judiciary Committees. He joins us now from the Roundhouse Studios in Santa Fe to talk about issues he is working on. It's great to have you on the program now. I want to start off and talk about something that obviously gained a lot of attention during this 30-day legislative session. And that was the passage of extreme firearm protection law, the red flag law, that was really crafted in your committee there. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that piece of legislation.
Well, let's just get right to the meat of things. But no, Anthony, I need to give you a disclaimer. When I first got up there this year, somehow I managed to hook up with some allergies, and I have been a little bit messed up all session as far as that goes. I'm a little swollen, a little puffy. So this is not exactly my normal look, but you know, it's the best I could do. But the red flag law, you know, it's one of those things that I think is certainly well-intentioned from a lot of people, but as a practical matter, you know, there's already laws on the books that can help sheriff's departments and local police officers and others get a hold of those guys that they're concerned about. So it's this one's going to be a little tougher to deal with. There's too much time in between some things. So if somebody's creating a disturbance, domestic disturbances, the time in between when the officer finds out and the complaint is then taken to the judge and it's acted on, I mean, that's the sort of stuff that may just, you know, take it to a timeline that's not going to be a good thing.
Yeah. So I just want to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Did you support this legislation?
I did not.
Okay. Now, it seems like you had some concerns in regards to the due process end of things with this legislation.
You know, the due process is certainly one, but, you know, it's just the practical nature of the issue. And then, you know, because you can separate these things, I suppose, into two types of events that Red Flag is trying to deal with. One of them is, you know, those events where a guy really, really plans it out, you know, and he's going to go to the schools or he's going to go to the mall and he's going to do something. Or the guys that are acting erratically in a domestic violence situation. And I don't see actually in either how it's liable to do what everybody hopes it does. You hope you're wrong, and I tell you that right now. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope it does have, you know, a positive effect on something, because if you can save a life, that's important.
Well, I just want to kind of interrupt you there again. I'm sorry, but I'm trying to figure this out. I mean, there's been 17 states in the District of Columbia have enacted these laws. There was a poll by the Global Strategy Group, KRWG reported on this recently, that late last year on behalf of Every Town Gun Safety, the poll found that 85% of the people surveyed supported these laws, including 78% of gun owners. If we don't take a step with this legislation to address this issue, I mean, what are your thoughts on how we solve this issue in regards to gun violence in New Mexico? Obviously, it is an issue in parts of the state and across the country.
You know, I wish we would talk about those sort of solutions more. What we usually get our arms around, Anthony, is we want to talk about the symptom and addressing the symptom, and we don't want to talk about solutions. We don't want to talk about behavioral health and what we did 30 or 40 years ago with people that started allowing more people with mental health issues to be integrated among the population. And so those challenges, along with, frankly, with just the growth in population.
Well, I mean, our growth in population in New Mexico hasn't exactly been soaring. In fact, there's been a lot of folks concerned about people leaving the state. Now, you mentioned behavioral health and more people being out on the streets. I mean, in 2013, we had that Medicaid freeze that was enacted and called for by former Republican Governor Susana Martinez. Now, many in the behavioral health community said that was like a bombshell going off in our behavioral health system. Obviously, folks are really concerned in our state. In many ways, according to advocates in behavioral health, the state is still trying to get back on its feet in providing behavioral health care. And I've been involved in several reported projects with this here in southern New Mexico. There are some major challenges with behavioral health. So how do you feel that the state can really address this issue? Now, I want to go back to 2013 because that Medicaid freeze obviously caused some behavioral health providers in the state to close. Now, the taxpayers of New Mexico recently have had to pay some of those providers $10 million apiece due to lawsuits that those providers filed in the state. Now, we should let our viewers know, of course, they probably already know that the Attorney General's office found that those behavioral health providers, there were no instances of fraud, which the former governor claimed. So I'm kind of concerned with this issue, and you as a state lawmaker and calling up this behavioral health issue and somebody who is running for re-election in your district in Alamogordo in southern New Mexico, a part that has many challenges. I mean, how do we move forward with this behavioral health issue? Obviously, we have a time where there is little excess revenue. So tell me how you as a state lawmaker plan to address this issue.
Well, you know, how many, I don't know, we go back and we can argue about whether the governor should have and shouldn't have. At the same time, when this was going on, she was joined by a Democrat attorney general in how they decided to address the problem from the legal concerns through the contracts. Now, obviously, as they dealt with it, it didn't turn out, I'm sure, the way they would have hoped either. But, it did. It did create a different set of issues because all of a sudden these people didn't have a way to get with folks and talk and maybe work through some of the issues they have. So the challenge that it brings up is just like you talk about. We got to figure out, again, ways to get our arms around the issue, not only that was created by that, but the issue that existed during that time. So the behavioral health issue, although it has expanded, hasn't been dealt with in New Mexico in a way that's going to make you, me, or any others feel safer.
Yeah. I mean, so that's completely understandable. Obviously, as somebody who sees the impact of this every day through reporting and just being somebody who walks around and travels around my community, there is an obvious impact there. So what do you know? I mean, what are you looking at? What is the research showing on steps that states are really addressing that issue of behavioral health that we're seeing some success?
You know, I'm not sure we are. And Anthony, you know, we have focused with the budgets and the growth in revenues. We focused on schools a lot. You know, we put over 600 million more, I believe it was, last year, and we're putting more in this year, you know, to help students move their lives forward, learn better, grow. We've created the early childhood departments to try to help kids be you know, come in, have meals, have the opportunity to learn and do better early so they do better late. We're doing those things, which arguably we should have done earlier, but we still have this back end problem with the folks that are in the system or on the fringes of the system that we just don't have our arms around. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that maybe in the next session there will be more bills come up with behavioral health with legislators that actually are more familiar with the ins and outs of the system than I am.
Now, you brought up education and the massive investment. Obviously, everybody knows that the governor called for a moonshot in education and this week signed into law enacting the Early Childhood Education and Care Fund that is going to be relying on excess revenue from oil and gas in our state. Your thoughts on this action and the creation of that fund?
Well, you know, it's like anything else. When you have something that's totally new and is being dealt with in a new way, you hope it works. You know, we don't have a way to know for sure, but we hope it works, because all of these things, Anthony, are designed to make New Mexico better. Everyone introduces things and does this stuff that they believe will work better for New Mexico. And, you know, I hope it does. I hope all this early childhood focus really brings the benefits that, you know, some are just passionate about. So it's, you know, it's something that I hope works.
It's something that the state really doesn't have a choice in the matter either, because as we all may know here, it's facing a lawsuit in regards to not providing adequate care to students, at-risk students in our state. I want to move on and talk about some legislation that you've been involved with. I want to talk with you about SB 279, the Food Grocery Receipts Tax Act. Can you tell me about that legislation and why you felt out the need for that?
Okay, Anthony, I was mayor of Alamogordo. You may or may not remember.
Yeah.
But back in 1994, they removed the tax from food. But when they did that, they gave the communities what you call a hold harmless payment. And so the communities have been getting a payment that's coming straight out of the state's back pocket from you and me and everybody else. So that money is just coming straight from the general fund, going to cities and counties in the state, or it's not being offset any way, shape, or form. So you've got this payment that's going to cities and counties that's reached as high as $150 million a year. Well, in 2013, the legislature decided that they would stop making the hold harmless payments because we couldn't afford to at that time.
And many communities, I think many people in our communities here in southern New Mexico know exactly what happened there. When that money stopped coming in, communities, cities, counties were forced to kind of figure out how they're going to make that revenue. And so they raised taxes. So is that kind of your feeling behind this act? Are you trying to get some extra revenue in places that don't have major shopping centers and things like that?
Well, understand that what it did when you stopped making those payments, we gave communities 3/1/8 increments of what was called the hold harmless tax. It was designed to be imposed incrementally as communities lost that revenue. Well, communities like Las Cruces, and I believe Doñana County, and I believe Otero County, decided they would go ahead and impose the entire 3/8 right away. They double dipped basically on the tax and the payment. So they were getting them both. Now Las Cruces, what you're going to see is Las Cruces already implemented it. So as they go down with the hold harmless payments, they're going to have to figure out something else. I don't know what that'll be because they've already imposed the hold harmless tax. But the thing that this other bill does, which is designed to stop the state's payments and put then cities and counties on a little more stable source, is you turn around, you stop the hold harmless payments now, just stop them, because for the most part, most of these communities have either imposed the 3/8 or almost imposed all of it. So let's just do that. Let's then put a 2.5% tax on food. That can go to cities solely and keep cities whole from the loss of the hold harmless payments. Counties, because of the way it was all structured, when they impose that 3/8, they actually gain revenue, then get more revenue from the hold harmless tax than they were getting from the hold harmless payments. Then, as the other parts of that bill, the two other parts of the bill was you stop taxing Social Security, or you stop your income tax on Social Security, and you stop your income tax on military retirement. You create a better, more sound tax system, and hopefully the doggone cities and counties won't have to raise more, because over the next little bit, they will have more people either stay, especially in Las Cruces and Alamogordo, where there's a lot of potential military retirees, a lot of people coming to Las Cruces that could be Social Security retirees. So we sit there and put us on an upward path instead of a downward path.
Yeah, I know some lawmakers, especially those in rural communities, have been really supportive of this issue and that tax, but there are those in the state that are very concerned, living in one of the poorest states in the country, that this could impact the most vulnerable, who are struggling and living dollar by dollar, week by week. And so this can make an impact on taking food off their table. Your thoughts on that issue?
Well, you know, Anthony, do the numbers. And then also look at the fact that how many of the most vulnerable that you talk about, the poorest of the poor, who do not pay tax on food already, who will not be impacted by that. So, those sort of things become the debates we need to have, because we need to put the state on good solid footing going forward instead of trying to bounce from election to election, hoping that we can sneak something in somewhere that really changes the system maybe, but doesn't really address the fact that the system needs to have some reformation. So it puts the state on a more solid footing to grow and prosper.
Yeah, you talk about systematic change. One of the legislation pieces that you've been involved with was increasing the in-state per diem rate. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on why you feel that is needed?
You know, I hadn't been changed in a long time. I signed on with my friend Senator Pat Woods. Mm-hmm. Up there to allow for your local communities to pay up to a higher rate when they send their employees out to remote parts of the state or other parts of the state. I think the per diem rate this time is like about $90 a day. So if you send a guy from Las Cruces and you send him to Taos in the height of the tourist season, he may have to live in one of the more uncomfortable hotels he might see up in Taos, or he's going to pay more than he would are going to pay more than his per diem allows. So it's just an adjustment factor to try to make it more fair to local guys, state guys, to if we're going to send them around, so they at least don't have to come out of their own pocket.
It is a big state. Now, I want to talk with you about something else that has gained more traction this legislative session, speaking of systematic change, and that is the issue of paying state lawmakers in New Mexico. Many may not know that in our audience, that New Mexico does not pay its state legislators. They do get a per diem. Your thoughts on paying state lawmakers in New Mexico, would you support that?
Well, you know, I think we passed a bill out of judiciary, actually it's a constitutional amendment, I think, which would allow the state ethics commission to set salaries. And it'd be something you'd have to vote on and go from there.
Do you support it, though?
You know, I did then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's, you know, I should get it out to committee. Let's talk about it a little more and see what's what. The good chance it never gets to the floor. Mm. Good chance.
Really?
And, yeah, I mean, it, those sort of things, I mean, they're good ideas. Should lawmakers get paid? Well, you think about your own situation. Think about, you know, your next door neighbor. Maybe you've got somebody that's really capable and who might run for office if he felt like he could, you know, pay the bills if he did. Doesn't have to get rich, but just pay the bills.
Yeah.
Per diem doesn't pay the bills.
That is correct. Many have been critical, saying that it only leaves people that can afford to take 30 or 60 days off or are retired to run for office in New Mexico. So it's obviously an issue we are looking forward to keeping an eye on as that continues. I only have about 3 minutes left, but I want to talk with you about something you did bring up, and that was the state tax on Social Security in New Mexico. Okay. Your feelings on this issue being tabled?
Well, here's what it'll do, I think. You know, you've got surrounding states that don't tax Social Security. If you provide it, and retirees are becoming more discriminate on where they go, and they look at that, and that's one of those boxes that they check, and they say that, you know what, New Mexico taxes Social Security. Let's look at Colorado, Texas, and Arizona. Oh, man, they don't tax that. So that's a big positive for us, so let's consider them first. And if you get cut out of that picture right away, good chance they never consider you again, regardless of this, of the argument that's out there that you shouldn't tax Social Security from the, you know, beginning anyway, because it's being taxed twice. So from one perspective, it's not a good idea. It's a good idea from this perspective. It's a good idea from this other perspective. It creates a hole in the budget. So how do you backfill the hole?
So, I mean, I want to kind of hear where you stand on the issue, though. I mean, do you support a repeal?
I support it. Yeah, the Republican Senate sent a letter to the governor asking her to reconsider her stance and try to get one of these bills passed this year.
Yeah, I thought I saw your name, your signature on that piece of paper. Unfortunately, we are out of time here on Your Legislator. Senator Griggs, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and we hope you feel better.
Well, I appreciate that last part for sure, and it was a pleasure talking to you, Anthony. Thank you.